You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 478 of the Fabulous Peltoncast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we're coming to you from separate locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm. I almost got through them.
There we go. I'm coming to you from Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Well, you know what? Seattle is also home too.
Funny
now.
That you didn't mention another team this week.
Oh, they're not in first place. They're not in first place. Now home to two statues of point guards, Seattle, Washington. Because on Sunday, they unveiled the Sue Bird statue outside Climate Pledge Arena next to the one of Lenny Wilkins. A really fun event that brought back a lot of legends from throughout Storm history. I mentioned this back in 2022, Sue's final season, because of the fact that her career encompassed almost the entire history of the Storm. At that point, it was all but two seasons. Like, basically, any celebration of Sue turned into a celebration of franchise history and a reunion across these very different eras. And we had that same sort of fun element, although with the added bonus this time of Diana Taurasi showing up, in addition to Lauren Jackson flying from Australia specifically for the event with her son. All the living, tragically, obviously not Ann Donovan, but all the living Storm coaches, other than Noel Quinn, who was busy preparing for the game, were in attendance. Swin Cash spoke, so it was a great time.
That's awesome. Were you there at the ceremony? You were down there, right?
Oh, so I guess you didn't read my story. I take it.
No.
Oh no, and I didn't end up. I still have to post some of the stuff on Instagram, although it's very dated now. The photos and videos.
Is Diana like Diana and Sue Bird? Are they sort of like, are they great friends? Were they a little bit frenemies while they were playing, or
no? They were just friends.
They were just friends, but there was always a rivalry between them.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, when we play each other in fantasy football, I guess we are frenemies, aren't we? No, they were probably,
so they hate each other
deeply. They went years without doing a podcast together.
I mean, that might be true. I'm sure Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi probably did go years without doing a podcast together.
You know,
if that's the mark, a lot of people hate each other.
We did go years without doing a podcast together. This reminds me, have you watched Hard Knocks?
I have not. I feel like Hard Knocks, I don't know. Like, maybe this is a complete aside. This might even be post-pod talk, which I was like, no post-pod talk this week. I feel like the NFL preseason is like less attention than it has ever gotten.
You're not spending enough time on ESPN during the daytime hours.
But okay, fair enough. No, I have not.
I do feel like Hard Knocks has not penetrated the culture the way it has.
I don't even know what team it's about. I literally, is it about the Bills?
It is about the Buffalo Bills. So Josh Allen, this was actually on a podcast, believe it or not, with Taylor Lewan and another former Titans player. This is a big time podcast, apparently.
I've heard of this podcast existing.
They asked him.
I know that offensive linemen, when they retire, have podcasts.
I know one of them is a linebacker. The other, Taylor Lewan, is
no, it's always an offensive lineman and another player.
There you go.
That's how it goes.
Which one of the offensive linemen is Pat McAfee?
Or is it AJ Hawk?
It's
a TV show. They're different. Wait, they're the same? Sorry, they're different.
We talked about it after the pod a few weeks ago. They're all TV shows now. Anyways. So they asked him if he had any drinking stories, since he's from Wyoming or wherever he's from. Is he from Wyoming? I don't know. Went to Wyoming.
Josh Allen? Yeah.
Yeah. And he told them, you know, you guys did. I actually didn't drink for 11 years. And then I turned 12.
There we go.
So that's the Peltoncast with podcasting.
There we go.
Oh.
I feel like that was a little bit of like giving the people of Buffalo what they want.
Oh, it's more than a little bit. I agree.
I actually heard that quote. No, he's from Fireball, California.
Okay.
Grew up as a Fresno State fan.
That's going to be a big bummer for them. Or maybe not, because he wasn't that good in college.
Oh, how dare you? He put Wyoming on the map in college.
I do remember
Josh Allen in college. Yeah, you remember that? We were watching that?
I
thought he was
going to
be a bust.
I can't remember whether it was on the podcast or not, but we definitely talked about him.
We might have hated each other during that time period. but we're still watching Wyoming games
So
together.
anyway, Super and Dinah Taurasi are very close friends, despite the fact that
You're
they
the
competed
offensive
on the
lineman of this
court.
podcast, and I'm the wide
Am I?
receiver. Yeah.
I guess in as much as I'm the more famous one.
I think the offensive lineman has to be the more famous one too.
I agree with that. Yes.
In the
It's
Seahawks
Andrew
case, it can be
Hawkins and Joe
various.
Thomas, right?
I mean, it was. I think they haven't been together for years and years and years, but
Oh,
in the Seahawks case, various defensive players get to have podcasts also.
well. Well, we're going to talk about that at some point here. By the way, Third Poulton brother Mike Sean Dugar having another book signing for his book next Monday night at Elliott Bay Bookstore at
Are you going to
7 p.m.
this?
That is the plan.
There we go.
So, hope we can see some people there. That'll be
Is he
fun.
doing Q&A or is he like reading from the book? I was thinking that like a nonfiction book is kind of strange to read from.
Well, we've been to many Chuck Klosterman book readings in the day, and he does traditionally
Those
read
are
a
narrative
section.
though. It's not like a like an
Yes.
oral history where he's like, and then Doug Baldwin, quote, like
Well, it's not an oral history exactly. I mean, it is a narrative book, but yes, it does frequently quote players, and Mike Sean doing their accents might be fun. But anyways, I was thinking of Aaron Schatz when he did book tours for the Football Prospectus back in the day, and it was just strictly a Q&A. You're not going to sit there and read a prospectus capsule, even though I think we maybe have made that joke on
trying to
the
think about that from the block of Eddie Lacy.
podcast here. Yards per carry, 4.2, 3.9, 3.7. Projection, 3.4.
Boom rate, 21%. Bust rate, 46%.
I don't know who this pod is for, but
That
I
would
really
be
enjoy
awesome.
it. Yeah, I don't how did we get there? Are we still talking about Subert?
Subert and Diana Taurasi. Well, I mean, we could pivot away from you saying that Subert is the Ichiro of Seattle sports. Everybody
Didn't
is
say
like,
that.
I this is also maybe post-pod talk. I'm like, Ichiro, maybe not as good as people thought he was. And you're like, oh, you're so wrong. But actually, it's Sue Bird. And then everybody's like, but Tristan's so bad. And I'm like, all right,
Again, the point
fine.
is not that Subert is not one of the top, 15 WNBA players ever. It's just that she happened to also play with two of the top 10 WNBA players ever.
You're going to delete the section anyway. It doesn't matter.
I'm not.
So are we going to have statues for everybody in the city now? Because I feel like the amount of statues, when we were children, there were maybe zero statues in the
When did the
Seattle,
Don
Washington.
James statue go up? I mean, I'm sure he had to be. Had to have been retired before they put up the Don James statue. Also, when did the Jim Owen statue go up?
Because Don James was relatively recently. Like,
I
within the
mean,
last like 15 years, I think.
really, it appears that the Jim Owen statue was unveiled in 2003. So that does not qualify as our childhood, I
I
would
think
not
this might
say.
have been 2018 that the Don James statue went up. And the problem is, you
2017.
lost, right? The hippies lost. Get used to it.
I
Your
get given up the
anti-statue
fight.
sentiment, it is like, it is all statues everywhere in the city of Seattle right now. The amount of statues that we have and are going to have is just like, once you open up the door, give an inch, give a mile when it comes to statues.
Someone make a graphic tracking the number of statues, and then you got to account for the Ichiro statue in 2017.
Honestly, the fact that the Seahawks have no statues, right? Because they don't have any statues.
They do not. I mean, a lot of
Wait, just
stadia do
wait.
not have statues.
I'm telling you right now, they see the celebrate the
Okay, so
NFL
what's
teams
the.
can't do celebrations in the way that
Then
like basketball
they
teams
don't
can.
need to sell tickets.
But NFL teams are just, I always think about this, like the game day experience, it is so much more. We've talked about this before. Like it is impossible to do game day experience for that many people. And the same with like they can do statue unveiling, right? But like it's harder when it's just such a mass of people. And I think that's probably part of the reason that they don't. Maybe I think the tickets is probably part of it also, but like it's a little bit difficult to kind of do the pomp and circumstance. It has to be very general. It has to be like halftime celebration, a thing that 75,000 people can view.
I mean,
But
even when they did the Don James statue, I guess it was in October, but I don't like remember it being attached to a specific game.
let me ask you, who is the first Seahawks statue? Is it Steve
Yeah,
Largent? Is it Mike Holmgren? Is it Walt Jones? It's Walt
It's
Jones.
definitely not Mike Holmgren.
It's Walt Jones.
I mean, that sounded kind of dismissive. I mean, yeah, it's probably Walt Jones, just given entire career here, had team success, even if not part of the championship team. And then just the fact that time has passed since then, like, it's a little early probably still to be honoring one of the Legion of Boom players,
I mean,
or Pete
Marshawn's
Carroll.
getting one of the next statues after that. There's going to be a tip statue. No way that there isn't, right? There should be right now.
I mean,
There should be a.
I don't know. Like, there's lots of stadiums and arenas out there across the world that don't have statues.
Oh,
No one's
they're
asking,
coming.
like,
They're coming.
what's
Just
going to be
wait.
the first statue at the Moda Center? Like, I don't know. It's just there.
I'm telling you, once the team started doing the statues, you don't put the statues back in the bag. It's coming.
I
It'll be
mean,
an incredible thing in our post-apocalyptic world as people are looking through the wasteland that was Seattle, Washington, to sift through all of the statues in the SoTo area.
This is already what we do with Rome. I mean, it's not post-apocalyptic necessarily, but
Good point.
Fallen Empire still got the statues.
Still have Miles Mastrobuoni.
Did you know that Caitlin Clark is Italian?
Hello. I always liked Caitlin Clark.
I actually didn't realize that until I must have known it at some point, but I did not remember it until it came up on her Bird's Eye View interview with the aforementioned Sue Bird. But anyways, during the game, Holly Rowe is interviewing, my ESPN colleague is interviewing Lauren Jackson, says,
Meatsy.
she should
That's her
have,
mom's maiden name. All right. This is great
yeah,
news.
she should have a statue, huge cheer in the arena. I mean, that, just
Wait, who should have a statue?
Lauren Jackson.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. The statue is coming. Like,
I
once
mean,
you give Sue a statue, Lauren's going to need a statue.
I do think there is, we've talked about this. Sue is the greatest player in Storm history, even if she wasn't the best player in
And
Storm
even if you
history.
don't think she's good.
Lauren Jackson is the close second. Breanna Stewart, because of the fact that she didn't finish her career and didn't play that many,
Oh,
I mean,
there's not going to be a Steve Hutchinson statue.
I guess she could still finish her career here, but like, it's a pretty big gap between LJ and the rest of the field, is what I'm trying to tell you here. So,
Okay, still be two.
two would be perfectly appropriate. Although LJ is not, Sue is not passing, so she can't be passing to LJ, sadly. All right, that's other thing we had this week before we get into
Statue corner on the
it.
Beltcast,
Yes.
our weekly statue corner.
It's been a few weeks here. Last call for PeltonCast Fantasy Football this year. It's been very exciting to hear all of the listener who we didn't know previously, who has emailed us at
Is
peltoncast@gmail.com
that
to
for real?
participate this year. You multiple the listener.
Really? Are
Yeah.
they on the Discord?
No, I don't think they necessarily are.
There's people who listen to the pod. Are they watching the podcast too?
No, because we're not on video. We have not pivoted to video.
Did you see the message in the Discord about the Italian picnic?
I did, yeah, of
God,
course.
how am I having a classic American summer and wasn't at the Italian picnic? It's the
That
only thing
is
I've missed.
a great question.
I really.
If you didn't yell, shake them up while they were
Oh, yeah. God.
drawing for prizes
For
at the
bingo.
Italian picnic,
Shake them up. It's so good.
did you really have an American summer?
Oh, classic American summer.
Anyways, peltoncast@gmail.com if you'd like to participate. If you have emailed us, thank you. And we will be sending out the survey later this week to set up leagues and draft times. I don't know what we're going to do, though, this year. You're in the Champions League,
Fantasy
right?
football. No, I'm not.
Neither of us are in the Champions League. Champions League is Pelton free.
Feel like maybe winning the MVP should automatically put you in the Champions League, but okay.
I definitely do not
We
think
have
so.
four winners from each of the leagues that are coming back.
I mean, I haven't gone through the spreadsheet yet, but
So there's no room to nepotism put us in there even.
I mean, the way that you nepotism got put in there is
It's
that
because
I
you made it two
qualified
times.
multiple times and you got one of those spots. So me qualifying zero times, clearly you can't be
I
nepotism.
feel like managing one team is going to be helpful for me instead of thinking about two.
I agree.
Because they're even just emotionally, like I would watch the games and like T. Higgins would score a touchdown and I'd be like, woo, and I'd be like, oh. You know what I mean? Like
Oh, it's the worst.
I don't understand people who can have so many competing things. I mean, I do. It makes Red Zone more fun. and it makes football more fun to just be cheering for a lot of stuff at once. But like the just constantly being like, I'm playing, I have this player on one team, I'm playing against this player on another team is a little bit like you want to be able to focus in. And that's
I
when I've
agree.
been the best, is when I manage one team. So this is the year I return to the Champions
It was
League.
a different level of play back then too, I gotta say.
Oh, you're saying before we were in the Pelton Cast Leagues?
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, it is now time to focus in on your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
So, like, it was my anniversary last week. Ironically, it was on the first day of all the swoon the Mariners are in. But anyway, Mrs. MVP loves to eat at chain restaurants. So we settled on Applebee's. They have a 2 for $25 meal. We made it a whole thing. There was a salad bowl clue, Applebee's anniversary. I think you guessed it a few times, I'm sure.
I believe I submitted it.
No, I submitted it.
Oh, okay.
See, that's how big of a deal it was that you think you submitted a thing that I submitted. I was jump scared by the famous Cousin Katie at Safeway. She snuck up on me and said, "Hey, nerds," on the day of her anniversary, a few days before my Applebee's anniversary. And the idea sounded so good that even she went to Applebee's for the 2 for $25.
Amazing.
So, anyway, this Applebee's meal was built up. I looked forward to it. We even moved it up a day earlier because I was like, sure, yeah, that Applebee's today sounds great. So later, while I was in the bathroom stall of the Applebee's, for I swear to God, literally 20 minutes, thinking back on the life choices I made, the onion rings I chose to eat, the chicken parmesan fettuccine thing I got as part of the 2 for $25 and could only stomach one bite of. The look of it was so abhorrent and chicken so rubbery that it reminded me of another mistake I made, getting a chicken sandwich from Carl's Jr. back in like 2006, which I still remember to this day. There is a texture that chicken should not be, and both Applebee's and Carl's Jr. managed to conjure. But anyway, while I was sitting there in the stall, I started thinking to myself, how did I get into this position that I was excited to eat onion rings and chicken parmesan fettuccine from Applebee's? And that's when I realized that a group of people collectively can convince themselves of a really fucking bad idea. Which, of course, is where we get to the Seattle Mariners. The Applebee's chicken parmesan fettuccine of franchises. And somehow, we as fans convinced ourselves that this team, with its plus 24 run differential, manager who has no idea how to handle a bullpen or maximize win percentage, the man loves to bunt, wildly overrated pitching rotation, an offense that was relying on stolen bases from Josh Naylor, had a chance to win a World Series. This is a franchise who has made the playoffs one time since 2001 and has built a statue to celebrate almost every division round appearance, and so clearly was on a schedule-related hot streak. We judge their playoff odds and World Series chances at the highest possible moment after sweeping the White Sox and the clearly done with the season Rays, but completely forgot that the series before the Gino trade, they had just split with the Angels and were pretty unceremoniously beaten by the A's. We keep saying things to ourselves like, if only we could get in, the pitching could beat anyone. I guess that's true, so long as they don't face the mighty Orioles or the Mets coming off of losing 10 out of their last 11. But in reality, this staff is 19th in baseball in WAR and is down to one ace, count them, just one ace. But it's good to have Bryce Miller and his almost six ERA back. Seeing Gilbert get rocked by the Phillies the way he did, serving up meatball after meatball, was a nice reminder to me that those balls he had previously been serving were from Applebee's and going out to White Sox hitters before this. So it collectively was a bad fucking idea to judge the Mariners World Series odds in the middle of a hot streak when it so clearly was about to fall apart, because this last week of Mariners baseball has been a long trip to the Applebee's bathroom.
Oh boy. I said I couldn't wait for your hot takes, and they did not disappoint.
Thank you.
In any sense. The Mariners, according to Fangraphs, still have 9% odds to win the World Series this year.
Can I tell you, okay, hot take aside. Yes. The hot take was beautiful. I'm so happy about it. But hot take aside, do you want to know, after researching everything for this hot take, I called researching. I type in Fangraphs, and I'm like, I've done research. But
I pulled it up. Mine is outstanding research.
After researching for this hot take, do you want to know what I was left with?
What's that?
Somehow more hope. Seeing that their playoff odds basically didn't go down at all, World Series odds haven't gone down at all, because now, this is when I get to the non-hot take part of it. Now, maybe it's separate hot take, the alternative. This is all takes Tristan. Now, the Mariners aren't on the win streak. They're on the losing streak, and this is where we should judge them. And if this is where they sit after getting beaten badly by the Phillies for a couple of games in a row, I assume that's updated. But after getting beaten badly by the Phillies for a couple of games in a row, after losing the series to the Mets, if they're still in this place, I mean, we knew that the playoff odds were a little bit juiced by just how bad the schedule is, and that's still a reality. But like, the way that baseball works is just getting in is the point. Also, though, there are people out there, namely you, who are talking about how bad the pitching staff is, and there are some numbers that don't look great. But I was looking at XFIP by starters. I was just looking for bad stats about the Mariners starters, and it was kind of hard to find them. Really bad stats. Like, the pitching staff isn't elite, but like, their XFIP by starters is still ninth in baseball, and that's coming off a pretty bad season. So I think if you were to look at, basically, like, if you could judge true value of a pitching staff, it probably still is, even with the Mariners, with the home field advantage for the staff, probably like top five talent rotation in baseball.
I mean, XFIP is not park adjusted for the strikeout effect at T-Mobile Park, so
but even
that might
like,
flatter. But yeah, to your
the
point,
starting WAR is 12th. You know, like, an overall rotation is not bad either. Like, this, the pitching staff has, I seemed a little bit worse maybe than they've actually played.
Yes. I mean, look, you got upset at me once upon a time for saying that nothing is ever as good or as bad as it seems. I will say, I think we can agree on, no team is as good as they seem during a winning streak, and no team is as bad as they seem during a losing streak. Can we agree on that?
Yeah.
Because they're all the same players they were a week ago.
I mean,
fun fact.
Some teams are as bad. That's the thing, though. That's why you can't strictly judge it this way. I think that the way to judge it is to, because time has to pass, the wins have to stack up. The Tigers at the end of last season, they weren't on a specific win streak. I don't, maybe there was one in there, but like, the Tigers were as good as they were at the end of last year.
Based on this season, yes.
And they carried it through, and then they had another good season. And there are teams that are bad. So there are teams that are on losing streaks that are bad.
But no one says it when the Tigers are on that streak at the end of the season, they're, you know, slightly better than their overall record. They see that they're like going to win 70% of games or whatever it is, like something preposterous that you could never win in baseball.
The thing,
that's
judge,
how people
you just,
work.
You always got to come back to Fangraphs. Fangraphs knows. Fangraphs knows all these things. Fangraphs knows that there's going to be this losing streak. And that's why none of the stuff has changed that much. In our hearts, in our brains, things change so rapidly in a win or a losing streak. And we get so excited about it. Fangraphs doesn't care about that. I mean, like, the numbers matter, but they're looking at the rest of the season. The computers know. And
well,
that's where it's...
The other thing I've been thinking about is, like, people get so caught up in, you know, we talk a lot in this pod about pay more attention to the over where you are than the direction you're going. And like, people get so caught up in the, like, the momentum aspect of it. And it's like, but that was wrong before. Like, when the Astros were way up and the Mariners were way down, you knew that it was wrong.
I think
so why would you not think that it might be wrong, you know, when the Mariners are way up and the Astros are way down, Or it was wrong then, and now it
I
may
mean,
be. It will continue to be wrong because it's not the most recent set of seven games is never that predictive. Oh, but also the Astros have not been that good in this stretch.
that's the other thing is that's the thing that the Mariners have benefited from. It's a lot of teams around the wild card have not played very well. And so even though they're on a bit of a swoon, what are they up in the wild card right now? Still 2.5 games up. I mean, that the Royals are the team where I'm like, we're worried about a lot of people, but it feels a little Tigers-y to me.
I was not getting there to the being worried about the Royals. I gotta bet.
The Royals are the team to be worried about.
8-2 in their last 10 have won 5 in a row, up to a nil differential. Houston.
It's not necessarily the Mariners who only need to be worried about them, though. The Yankees and the Red
Right,
Sox
right.
also need to. And I
Yes.
think that's why it's good that there isn't like a runaway wild card team. There's still three spots if the Mariners, there are four chances for the Mariners to make the playoffs.
My God, the Astros run differential since August 12th.
No, it is terrible. What is it since August 12th?
I believe it's -39.
I
They
mean,
lost 14-1, won 4-1, lost 7-0, won 5-4 in extras, then 12-0, 10-0, and then 1-0 in extras today. They have been outscored 23-0 in their last three games.
and I think the difference is, let me see, those games haven't been against, I mean, obviously the Orioles, well, the Tigers are really good too. Now they've played some really good teams in a row. I take that back. It was just the losing 2 out of 3 and getting shut out 2 times by the Orioles in between there, which, it's Mariners. Yeah.
Maybe the Orioles are good.
That was the Mariners shaking hands with the Astros and losing 2 out of 3 to the Orioles, getting kind of embarrassed by them. But that's what I kept saying to you all summer was I don't understand why the Astros are good, why their record is this good, and they have fallen completely back to earth. So, but having those four chances. So the Mariners are in a better position than almost any of the other teams that are in the wild card mix right now because the Astros have been playing so badly. And that run differential, just seeing that the Mariners are second in run differential in the AL West, but that team that they're behind is not the Astros, is a very good sign for them. So
The Texas
I actually
Rangers, who are 7.5 out with their +46 differential or whatever,
I think all
+69 now.
things considered, they're The Mariners are fine.
I mean,
Plus,
the
the
advantage the
Rangers are plus
Mariners have,
46.
they are +46. The advantage the Mariners have, to your point about both the wild card and the AL West, is they have multiple outs. So that is a good place to be.
And I think they have tiebreakers against a lot of these teams as well.
True.
So that's becoming a factor now. And it's hurt them a couple times in the last couple of years where they've gone in a series and it was like they had to do insurmountable things in the last weekend because not only did they need to have a better record, they didn't have the tiebreaker, so they had to beat those teams. They couldn't be in a position to tie, and that stuff matters. So I think the Mariners are fine. And even like the loss yesterday, I didn't see any of the loss today. I mean, they're tied in the eighth. The Phillies are fucking good. They're good and they're at home.
It was an unfortunate, like, it's so exciting because it seemed when they went down 4-1 insurmountable. So Bryce Miller returned today, his first start in months, went 5 innings, gave up 4 runs on as many hits, a couple of home runs against the hard-hitting Phillies, which you described as all like lumberjack types. Was that it the other day?
I don't think I said that, but they're very classic Phillies right now. They look like they could be a 90s Phillies roster. I think I said it was a bunch of bearded white guys, so maybe they're extrapolating to lumberjack
I'm
types.
pretty sure you did say lumberjack types then. Brawny bearded white guys, because we're bearded white guys, but we are no one would ever describe us as lumberjack types. So the Mariners rally back to tie it on 3 runs in the top of the eighth, including a Gino Suarez double with 2 outs. That was pretty thrilling. And then immediately Matt Brash gives up the 2 runs in the bottom of the eighth, and suddenly you're staring at trying to score twice off Duran. Wasn't an ideal way to go about things.
They're just like the Phillies are better than the Mariners. We know that. We know that for a fact right now. And I said last week that I was going to judge this Mets series and this Phillies series to be like, are the Mariners ready for to be competing for a World Series? And the answer to that is kind of no. Like, I know that the World Series odds are what they are. What are the Phillies World Series odds? They're not that much higher than the Mariners, but it's because they have to go through the Dodgers to get there. The Mariners don't have to go through the Dodgers. The Blue Jays are probably beatable. The Tigers, we know, are beatable. The Phillies, if they had to go through a gauntlet like the NL to get to the World Series, it wouldn't happen. Their
Yeah,
playoff odds would be minuscule.
let's put some respect on the Brewers' name here.
And the Brewers, right? Like, I mean, most of the best teams are in the NL. The Cubs, the Brewers, the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Padres. It's just going to be whoever comes out of the NL is going to have been through a gauntlet to have gotten there. And it's not the same in the AL.
Which is
So.
not necessarily guaranteed that you're going to win once you get there, is again in baseball, but. By the way, it was the top of the seventh that the Mariners rallied. So they did have a scoreless bottom in the seventh before they gave up the lead and gave
But
up the
there's also
tie in
been
the eighth.
like positive signs. You know, Gino, I think, was 3 for 4 today. I didn't see almost any of this game. I didn't say almost. I literally saw zero of this game today. But like looking at the box score, I was kind of like looking for hope. And I'm like, all right, Gino was 3 for 4 with a multiple RBI double, right? Yeah, with a 2 RBI double. Cole Young, the way that he was hitting yesterday. I think we'd never need to see Dylan Moore bat again for the Mariners. I'm a little shocked that he's made it through. Like,
Well,
Dylan Moore still being on this roster is kind of incredible to me.
Dylan Moore maybe got a reprieve. I don't know if you want to transition to that news story.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious how much of a reprieve it is, but
So Victor Robles, in his rehab stint at AAA Tacoma, got hit by a pitch on Sunday, was angry about it, presumably about it potentially targeting the shoulder that he's been
it was
rehabbing.
also the cute culmination of
4 times in 5 days or something, or was.
even, I mean, Robles was like seeing all of the at bats that he was affected by in a row. If you see it broken down, where it's like all of the hits by pitch, and then he had at bats where he's standing at the very back of the batter's box. Like, to me, I'm more concerned about Robles, less about the suspension and more about just the mental aspect of it. Of he was clearly going through it in Tacoma, and not by his own volition, right? This is just he was getting hit. But like when seeing him in a couple of at bats just standing at the back of the batter's box, like that should not be a thing that is on your mind right now. Probably won't be on his mind by the time he's back from suspension, but it was a little bit like I don't know what the fuck happened.
He's had 5 times in 15 at bats on Instagram. So threw his bat at the pitcher, then charged the mound, continued throwing items from the dugout after being ejected for the game.
Let me ask a question. Okay, talk about the suspension first.
10-game suspension. He is appealing, but that has to be served after he's at the major league level, after he is reinstated from the injured list.
So that doesn't exactly make sense to me. So like
Well, it wouldn't make sense if you could just,
send a player to the minors and be like, oh, they're doing their suspension in the minors.
or be like he's suspended. Well, he can't play because he's injured. That obviously would not make sense.
Yeah, it's a
But it
complicated
is
one.
interesting. Like in basketball, after I think it's 5 games, you're allowed to put a suspended player on the suspended list and then add another player to your roster. Apparently in baseball, that is not the case. You just have to be down the roster spot. So the Mariners, Jerry DePoto talked to reporters about
Wait,
this.
I want to ask you a question about Robles before then. If he
Okay.
doesn't throw the bat, is it like a 5-game suspension?
I don't know if it's even that. I
I
think
do
the
not
bat throwing
remember.
was pretty considerable here.
I saw it, like I like pulled up TikTok after the Mariners game, and it was like immediate that I saw it, and I was like, oh shit. I do not recall a time of seeing anybody throw the bat ever. I cannot remember another bat throwing from a hit by pitch.
It's an extreme maneuver,
So
no
you
question.
think just the charging the mound, the words, the charging the mound, the throwing stuff on the field is like maybe a suspension?
I think it's probably a suspension. I think at most maybe 5 games. I don't know. I mean,
I think
I'm not an expert in this.
the news story of it is part of what I think made it longer.
I mean, he was front and center on SportsCenter, which is where I happened to see about it. I hadn't heard about it previous to that.
You see the Rich Eisen thing?
Yeah, that was very awesome.
Kudos to you. I was like, how crazy to think that Rich Eisen would return to ESPN and it would be a place that he would work.
My ESPN colleague, Rich Eisen.
When we were kids watching Rich Eisen and Stuart Scott, it's kind of a crazy thing to think about.
R.I.P. Stuart Scott. Yeah, so the Mariners, according to Jerry Depoto, originally were reactivating him during this upcoming homestand during the month of August, which would have required them creating a spot on the roster. Now, presumably, they will not bring him up until at least September 1st when rosters expand and you do get the additional spot. I thought Jerry Depoto's quote was a little confusing. Let's see here. Let's see. What did he say? Oh, that's the wrong story. I can't believe I accidentally clicked on that one. How Robles' suspension affects Mariners roster splint. In theory, you're losing that. We'll get the extra spot, but in theory, then you're losing that spot. So I'm not sure it actually helps, DePoto said. Well, it does because he's going to be suspended at some point. You're not like just going to cut him and never have him suspended. So it helps. You'd rather have that be down one roster spot when you have 28 than be down one roster spot when you have 26. That's just simple math. So I definitely think it is more favorable to do it on September 1st.
ESPN senior writer flames Jerry Depoto for not understanding simple math.
Let's not do the aggregators work for them. So I don't know. I think that's probably what will happen. But then again, in that case, you don't have to send anyone down to create the roster spot.
I'm not sure if it's the right strategy. I get, let me look at the schedule here. Because
I mean, I think it also Victor Robles benefits from a longer rehab for the reasons that you were talking about. Like, they should
yeah,
not
but
be rushing him back to the major leagues.
it's not a
Like,
longer rehab. I mean, he's doing BP and stuff like that, but it's not a longer rehab in as much as he's playing game live pitching. You know, like that to me is how he's going to have to get right. But there's probably going to be an adjustment period for Robles when he's back up. So now you're pushing that to like the thinking should be how can Victor Robles help us make the playoffs and how can Victor Robles help us win in the playoffs? And to me, it's almost like you just bite the bullet, right? Like you eat your vegetables right now with the goal of having it later when it matters. And so if Robles is going to take obviously the 10
he is
days.
still able to play right now in Tacoma, right? Because number one, he's appealing the suspension. And in
Okay.
baseball, the appeals process is like weirdly long. Because it used to be like you had to travel to New York and personally meet with the president of the league or the commissioner. I don't think that's the case
Look him
anymore.
right in his eyes and shake his
Oh,
hand. It's the most baseball shit ever.
it?
I mean, so if he
Also,
were.
the fact that they used to have like two different enforcement structures, one for the American League and one for the NL. Just make it as convoluted as you possibly
They
can.
really?
Yeah.
Because it was. You would appeal to.
Because, like, the American League and National League functioned as their own separate things for a
But they
long
had
period of time.
one commissioner.
They did.
So let's say that you were to call him up now and be like 10 games. It's an A's series at home, it's the Padres series at home, and it's the Guardians. Important series. If you wait until September, it's three against the Rays, three against the Braves, three against the Cardinals, one against the Angels. Probably fine to not have Robles on the field. That is a weaker set of games than the upcoming games. So maybe that's the thinking. But to me, I'm like, okay, then you activate Robles September 12th, right? If it's September 1st that happens, it takes Robles 2 weeks to get back into, you know,
September
baseball
12th
form.
per the times is when he's eligible.
That's literally what I said. But yes, thanks for citing the Seattle Times. He's not going to be playing every day during that time period because Canzone still exists. Like, and Canzone is playing better right now than Victor Robles was playing. Obviously, it could be a bit of a platoon, but you want Canzone's bat in the lineup. So maybe Robles is starting against lefties. Then we're talking about a couple of games that he's going to have to kind of get back to pro baseball speed. It's not going to be the same as in the minors. Ultimately, I think because of the suspension, if you wait until September, I don't know if Robles is a factor on this team for the rest of the season.
But to your point about how well down Canzone is hitting, how big of a factor is Robles going to be, period? I
I
think
mean,
he's
you
going
want
to
to
be a
give him,
situational guy.
but he's a better situational guy than Dylan Moore is. If you're,
Well, he doesn't need to be at major league speed to be a such better situational guy than Dylan Moore.
it would just be nice to try to get him to the place of can you be an actual contributor to this team a little bit sooner? And maybe it happens September 12th, but I am not expecting much from Robles.
I
We'll
think
see.
that's probably
I mean,
fair.
when they signed him, I said he was going to be a footnote in history. I said that Victor Robles was going to be somebody that we'd remember when we remembered some guys. You know what I mean? I thought he
You
was
said
Tommy La
that he was
Stella.
going to be
So.
no, the guy Adulis, no, definitely not him, but the guy from the Rangers. Oh no, see, we've already forgotten his name.
Which guy from the Ranger? Well, give me some context.
The
Ravi
guy that
Tellez?
they no, the guy that I definitely shouts to the Wordle on Tuesday,
Was it
which was
Rowdy?
it was rowdy.
There we go.
No, the guy that the Mariners picked up subsequent to Robles' injury
Oh
to play
no.
right field
Oh
for a period
no.
of time.
No, I thought so.
But you
Leody
know what is,
Taveras.
yeah, Tavares. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. He's still with the Mariners, I think.
He's in AAA?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else on the Mariners? Anything else on the Rainiers? Anything else on the old structure of the American and National Leagues? And possibly the American Association? Who can say?
Wait, hold on. I want to triple check that. I think he is.
I mean, it's not a big deal, but that does sound vaguely familiar now that you mention it.
Yeah, no, he's
He
in AAA right
accepted,
now.
yeah, he accepted a demotion.
And he's oh no, that's age difference. I thought that was war. I was like, he's
Oh
doing bad.
no.
No, he's doing fine in Tacoma.
Wait, does that mean he's younger than the average player at AAA?
He is minus 0.8.
All right, good for him.
Yeah, people in AAA are old.
Because many of the top prospects are in double A. Let's get into the roundup, starting with the Seattle Sounders, who deserved better in a 1-0 loss at Minnesota on Saturday night that snapped their 10-game unbeaten streak across all competitions. The Sounders controlled play in the first 70 minutes but didn't find the back of the net. The Loons then scored in the 73rd minute against Stefan Fry, who was seeing his first action for the Sounders since July 6th. Sounders mounted a furious comeback effort but couldn't find the equalizer despite 16 shots, 5 on goal, which produced 2xG to 0.4. For Minnesota. Sounders did that despite pretty significant squad rotation ahead of Wednesday's League's Cup quarterfinal, easy for you to say, against Liga MX side Puebla, which you will be in
That's what I was going
attendance
to
at,
say.
our live correspondent.
I have learned who they're playing.
You are going to be our rundown correspondent. You're going to actually pay attention during the Sounders section next week, maybe.
I
Nope,
would
no
count on
promises.
it.
This should be winnable. Puebla. Again,
Puebla.
easy for you to say.
Everybody's trying, right, at this stage.
Yeah, of
Okay.
course.
This is a big match.
I mean, I don't know if I can go so far as to say it's a big match, but it's a they're making a deal out of it, the Sounders certainly. Puebla was second to last in the Liga MX Clausura standings and is currently there through the first 5 games of the Apertura. But they beat NYCFC 3-0 and CF Montreal, which is no longer Montreal Impact news to me, 2-1.
Wow.
To advance despite a 3-1 loss to Columbus.
Haven't they been not Montreal Impact for a while?
Probably. Seems like it. But it was, again, it was news to me. I may pay more attention to the MLS than you do, but I still don't pay that close attention. Sounders back to MLS play at the weekend against Sporting Kansas City, which comes in 13th in the West, averaging less than a point per match with a minus 13 goal differential. Sounders still a point ahead of LAFC for fourth in the West standings, but dropped back behind them in terms of points per match. Were you able to find this information? Or was it too difficult? Or were you looking up something entirely differently after all that?
It was 2021, it looks like.
Okay.
So that's been a while. They still call them the Impact, though. Like,
Is like the nickname for the team.
yeah.
It seems reasonable. Seattle Reign FC had a draw that fully felt like a loss on Monday. They got the opening goal in the 3rd minute and led the lowly Chicago Stars 3-0 after a score 12 seconds into the second half. Reign still led 3-2 more than 8 minutes into stoppage time, lengthy stoppage time, when Chicago equalized off a corner kick, which was originally scored an own goal but eventually credited to Stars keeper Alyssa Nair, the first goal. Naturally, of her NWSL career. The Reigns' goals came from Jess Fishlock, who scored in all 3 matches since the midseason break, Jordan Heidema, and Emery Adames. The Stars had 21 shots, a whopping 11 on goal. Reigns still sixth in the NWSL standings before visiting the Houston Dash on Monday. Houston 10th, 2 points out of the last playoff spot. All right, Seattle Storm, since we last recorded, The good news is they've won two of their last three games, so they got that going for them. Or maybe it's four. Did we record prior to the game on Wednesday? I guess we did, didn't we?
Did we? No.
It was after they had lost to Atlanta.
Oh, no. It was before they lost to Atlanta.
Okay, so 2-2 in that
I predicted
span.
they would win all of those games.
You
And
did.
I mean, you're really looking at, I actually have some positive about the Storm too, but
We didn't talk about this up top, but one of the so Sue Bird was asked about like the game where they honored her during the regular season, essentially her senior day, quote unquote, during her last season, in the press
this
conference.
was this when she gave like the 3.5 hour long speech?
No, that was when her jersey was retired. We'll get to
Okay.
that.
Did she answer the question with like a 3.5 hour long speech?
She didn't. No, everything went, it was an hour long ceremony. It was a 15-minute press conference. Everything went according to plan. It was well timed. So she pointed out that what she remembered is she'd lost that game. She obviously lost her last game at Climate Pledge Arena, period, when the Storm were eliminated in the 2022 playoffs by the Las Vegas Aces. When her jersey was retired, I haven't double checked this, but I'm almost certain they lost that game because they were playing a pretty good team and they were not very good in 2023. And now you were so confident that they were going to beat Phoenix because of the
They
Sue
need
Bird
to
stat.
stop honoring Sue Bird.
That's the takeaway. The good news is there's really not much left for them to
Oh,
do.
I think they might find a way because
They're
you've been
gonna.
through a lot of things right now.
I have listened. I didn't even list the street renaming, which was not. It was not during a game. But you know what? They lost that night too. It
Now,
wasn't like as clearly associated with it.
people aren't reading the subtext about you and Sue Bird right now. I'm joking. It's so, but
This is not your best joke.
I just because it makes you personally upset.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were playing
You
Washington.
never like it when the joke is on you.
Yeah, I mean, I
There
don't.
used to they're gonna find a way to keep honoring Sue Bird. They'll keep losing with it as well. This.
They were playing Washington and lost a really bad loss last year, that started their slide down the end of the season. There you go.
So the takeaway that I have for the Storm and the positive, they played some hard games. Of those four games that they've played, I mean, I guess there's two different ways to view it. There's two
So
different roads that you could be on.
they started their road trip Tuesday in Chicago with a win. That was the first game they played against the team that is not in the playoffs or fighting with them for the last playoff spot in the case of the Los Angeles Sparks in the month of August, the entire month of August.
But there's just a reality, which is, what are the Storm then? If their best case scenario able to compete or win one of three against good teams, and this was my positive
They're
that I took away
again
from it.
right in all of these games.
Hang the banner, build the trophy.
I mean, what's fascinating is like one of the things I looked at over the weekend to kind of like make sure I'm not like missing it on the Storm. Like, there's implied kind of power rankings from the spreads of games, what gamblers think of these teams generally, that are on unpredictable.com. And the Storm are fifth in that. So, like, they're still a good team. They just keep losing all these close games.
I mean, by point differential, they're six in the league.
They were ahead of
There's no
Indiana, which.
way that gamblers think they're better than the Aces, though. There's no way.
They might. I think they might have been ahead of them. I don't know.
That's
Gamblers,
absurd.
Vegas took the Aces' struggles pretty hard, I would say. Because usually I find that they're somewhat overvalued. The Aces have now surpassed them in that measure. They've moved up to fifth, and the Storm are in sixth.
So I guess what I'm saying is the positive takeaway that I had is I watched that Aces Dream game earlier today, and great game. Dream are very good.
Oh,
And
they are right now the second best team in the league, in my opinion.
I mean, they lost to the Aces, but it was a hard-fought victory for the Aces. Like they had to at home, they had to
Well,
pull out all the stops
the
to
Aces
win
are
that.
having the anti-Storm stretch right now, which only makes sense because the Storm have their draft pick and at one point were nominally competing for seeding with them. Because when the Storm traded their first round pick to Washington for Britney Sykes and not Vegas's, that trade happened on Tuesday, August 5th. At that point, the Aces were 15 and 14, and the Storm were 16 and 13. Since
I
then,
wonder if they could have traded either pick and the Storm were betting on themselves.
tough to say. Since then, the Storm are 2-5. The Aces, since that trade, are 7-0. But here are the point differentials in those games for the Aces: +6, +4 against the Storm, +8 against Connecticut, one of the weakest teams in the league, +6, +3. They did get a 19-point win against Dallas on Sunday, and then a 2-point was the final margin against Atlanta tonight.
Yes. And I think Atlanta could have won the game. There was a pass that
Oh,
wasn't made.
they easily could have won the game.
But
Yeah,
even in the
I
last
didn't see the
second, like
finish, but
if they'd kicked out for a three, there was a wide open three available for Atlanta. The last shot wasn't great. But
so the Aces are better, but they also have been getting extraordinarily lucky during this winning streak.
they are a better team though. Like I
Yeah,
think
I
the
think
thing
they
that
are.
you're not accepting
No, I
here
think they are a
about the
better
Storm
team.
is you're like there's two timelines. There's not two timelines. There's one timeline because the timeline that they're on isn't a timeline. Unless the goal is just to be fringe playoff team.
I think the
And
goal, again, as we talked about, was to win a playoff series,
I'm
which I
not
still don't think
sure.
is inconceivable if
It's
they, as long as they finish seventh. They have to finish seventh,
who would they
which is
play in the first round then? Do teams get byes? How does this work?
seems to, I mean, it's no longer buys. It
It's
is,
1-8-2-7.
yeah, but
They're not
who's,
going to win a playoff series.
well, Atlanta is one of the teams they would play that they just
And
played very
Atlanta's
close.
really, are you kidding me? They split a home and they split not a home and
Well,
home, a home and home.
it was technically a home
But
and home.
no, they split two games that were basically home games for the Storm
They
in
did.
Seattle. And the Dreamer, we just talked about how the Dreamer good.
I think the Dream would be favored in the series, but it's not inconceivable the
I've
Storm
got a
could
message
win.
for you about beating them. Dream on, buddy. Like, it is just,
You've done better.
it's not going
This
to
is over.
happen that they're going to make the. If your goal in this is hope to make the seventh seed and beat the Dream, like, and the other option is they're right now tied with the Liberty. Which of these teams do they beat in a playoff series? Is it the
Been
Lynx? Is it
strangely
the
good this
Liberty?
season against the Liberty, but obviously they have not faced them since the Liberty added Misiman.
Is it the Dream? Is it the Mercury? Is it the Aces?
I mean, the Mercury, again, a team they've split with this season, have generally been very competitive
You are
with.
I you're like me when it comes to Husky football with the Storm. And that's,
My point is that
which
none
is to
of these.
say, totally right.
My point is that none of these teams except Minnesota have really separated themselves. I think
They're
Atlanta is
all
very good.
separating themselves. The Storm, they're separating themselves because the Storm are 3-7 in their last 10 and are 500. They were under
But they have
500 earlier
actually
today.
played better than teams that are above 500 in their last 10 games.
Sure. I think you are looking at this a little too rosy about the Storm having two timelines right now. They have one timeline and it's Malanga,
I mean, I
and they
agree
should
that,
be
like,
doing.
if in terms of chances of doing anything meaningful in the playoffs, yes, obviously that's the case.
But they have
But
structured
that
the
is not
whole
their
team
goal.
around and the whole franchise around making people happy and figuring out a way to have elder superstars. Old, honestly, it's an old roster, right? And to making sure that those older superstars have the coaching that they want and everybody around them that they want. And I'm like, what is that for? Is the goal of that to be the eighth best team in the
The goal of that
WNBA?
is to sell tickets.
I
I continue to
okay.
tell you.
But the way that you sell tickets is building Malunga to being one of the top five players in the league, which is what she can be, right?
I don't know that whatever you're proposing makes her more likely to improve more quickly, but yes, when Dominique Malunga is at her peak, that will, a team built around her will be good enough to sell tickets on its own, without
Yes.
question.
So there's one timeline for the Storm right now. And
But if that was the one case, they wouldn't have traded for Brittany Sykes, which they just did.
they, but that's the team might think that there are two timelines,
But it
but
doesn't
there's
matter
one
what we
timeline.
think. All that matters is what the team thinks, because we're not running the team.
Okay, then why do we even do this? Why do we ever just be like, could we criticize the Seahawks for doing anything? Should we just be like, well, the team loves John Schneider, so John
But
Schneider's the
you're
GM.
talking about this
Every
in what.
move he's made is right.
You're talking about this in terms of what will happen when you
You're
talk
talking
about it.
about this in terms of internally what they think and to the outside world, what they think. Every team thinks that they're going to be competitive.
But
All
not
of them.
Every team thinks they're going to is acts as if they're going to be competitive, because the Washington Mystics were not that far behind the Storm and the Tristanians, traded Brittany Sykes to them in a transparent effort to make sure they did not make the playoffs this
they
year.
They are
and to
probably approaching things smarter than the Storm are. Isn't this
I mean,
your...
but they're also in a different reality where the Washington Mystics have the smallest arena in the league and are owned by a billionaire. The Seattle Storm are not owned by billionaires.
Who owns the Mystics?
Ted Leonsis, the same owner as the Wizards and the Capitals.
I feel like at some point, maybe they got to figure it out.
I mean, the Capitals, they win championships.
Oh, no, I think
right?
the...
Championship.
No?
They
when?
didn't win one? Oh, they've just been very good then.
I mean, I don't know how far back, but not like this year.
No, I'm aware that they did not win the championship this year, despite having one of the best records in the regular
the
season.
Capitals are spelled TALS, like cap, like money, not like the capital.
They are. That is a factual thing.
I
I
had
mean,
no idea.
But it's the there's also a difference between cap
they won a
capital
Stanley Cup in
city.
2017-18.
Okay, they're. There is also a difference between, yeah, the city is with an A, the building is with an L. So,
what?
Now that we've gotten to that capital versus capital discussion.
What do you mean the city is with an A?
When you refer to Washington, D.C. as our nation's capital.
But you call the Capitol building with an A?
No, the Capitol building is the O. Capitol build, capital,
our nation's
city
capital is with an A?
Is with an A. So
wow.
That's why the capitals are spelled with an A.
Really makes you think in this capitalistic society, huh?
Well, you know what the name of the arena is, right?
Capital One Arena?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Well, anyway.
Would you like to
been...
go into some more details about the shoes
about the Washington Capitals?
She was wearing.
I'm still failing to understand what the plan is. And if the plan is just try to be as good as possible at always. I'm not sure if they're even approaching that correctly.
I agree that they expected to be better this season. I mean,
it's been a successful season because they drafted a potential future superstar.
Yes.
But like they also turned around and traded away. Like if let's say, did you do trade grades for the Brittany Sykes trade?
I did.
Would you like to regrade them?
Yeah, I would.
What's your new grade? I bet it's not a B plus.
I mean, particularly, I would like to walk back the line where I said that they traded the worst of their three draft picks.
Ooh, boy. It wasn't that long ago that you wrote that.
It wasn't that long ago that they had a better record than the Aces. And the Aces were coming off losing by 53 to Minnesota. And
I've got a grade
chaos.
For that trade grade.
I mean, Brittany Sykes has played, you know, perfectly fine since getting
here.
Like,
it's not a Brittany Sykes problem. The roster isn't good enough. The team isn't good enough. Something isn't working for the Storm right now.
Just one thing isn't working. Crunch time. That's all that isn't working. And it's a random thing.
There
should
isn't
even
that
out.
Much
but there,
time for it to
I
turn
agree
around.
That there isn't that much time for it to turn around. But you can't make decisions based on knowing what the future, what your luck is going to be in the future. Like, if you knew what your luck was going to be in the future, you'd make a lot better decisions.
They probably shouldn't have approached the season. But even with Brittany Sykes, I'm sure we talked about this before. I might have criticized it. I don't know.
I mean, at the time, it seemed perfectly plausible that they could have finished in the fourth seed and had home court advantage in the first round. Like, were they going to win the championship? Very likely not.
Okay, so what are they, 16 and 16, 18 and 18 right now?
18 and 18. 8 games to go.
They probably beat the Wings. They probably beat the Mystics.
They do get the next two against below 500 teams. And then Indiana, although Indiana has been a very good team over the course of the season, still TBD what they're going to be at that point, because they have just been hit so hard by injuries at the guard spot. Obviously, Caitlin Clark hasn't played since before the All-Star break. Stephanie White said before their game the other day that the hope is to get her back by the end of the regular season seems exceedingly unlikely that she will play next week. And then they lost both Arie McDonald and why am I blanking now on who else had an injury in that game? Arie McDonald had been filling in for Caitlin Clark at point guard, and they lost her in the lot in their game at Phoenix a couple weeks ago. And they also in that game lost, oh, Sydney Colson, who had been a key part of the teams. They both suffered season-ending injuries. McDonald broken foot, Sydney Colson ACL. Then on Sunday, Sophie Cunningham suffered an MCL injury that is going to end her season. She'd been playing quite well, including against the Storm. So they are really down to it at guard right now. They did come back and beat Connecticut behind 38 points from Kelsey Mitchell on Sunday, a game that, frankly, if the Fever had lost, suddenly they only would have been a game ahead of the Storm in the standings. And that would have been a team you were looking at potentially catching too, especially because their next two are both against
You have to
Minnesota.
win games to catch teams, but yes, the I mean they probably have a five, obviously between 4-4 and 6-2 for the last eight, something around there.
Yes.
And if it's a 6-2, it's not like it's a great record at the end of the year. They're not in an amazing position, but it's fine. They're probably still going to lose a first round matchup, but it's not a complete loss
Yes.
at the end of the season. If they finish the season 500, I think that's a pretty bad season ultimately for what they're expecting and for the age of this team.
Yes. And for giving up your first round pick.
And giving up your first round pick. But the other piece of it is, and we must have talked about this at the time, the team that's competing with the Sparks to make the playoffs is those same Washington Mystics who traded Britton Sykes.
No, the Mystics are this. The team that's competing with the Sparks to make the playoffs is the Storm right now,
I
given that they're
thought
in the eight
all of
spot.
them make it.
No, LA is out of the playoffs at this point, and
Okay.
LA all.
Okay, so that is a must win. Like they are very happy about where the Sparks are at. Because if the Sparks, they're in the lottery if the Sparks don't make the playoffs, right?
Golden State could also, or you're saying LA is in the lottery? The Storm's
Yeah.
pick is in the lottery? Yes,
Okay.
and very high in the lottery because of the 2-year record. So
So
the
they
Sparks,
need to get into the playoffs.
I mean, Golden State could also fall into the play out of the playoffs. It's certainly plausible that both the Storm and the Sparks could make it. But the Sparks have lost two of their last three at home to New York, not terribly surprising. But then they only beat Dallas by one on the road on Friday, and then lost at the aforementioned Mystics on Sunday.
There could
So.
be a way that they finish with Golden State. If
Yes.
the Storm have clinched the playoffs, do they throw that game for their playoff odds?
I mean, they would have to also probably be locked into their seed and not have a chance to move up from, you know, eight to seven. But
It's an
if they've clinched
interesting
a playoff
situation
spot,
that
they
they may
probably
find
are in
themselves
that
in.
spot. So it
And
is.
I mean,
That
that.
is not actually the Golden State's last game of the season.
Okay.
The Storm play have are off the last night of the regular season. I think they're the only team in the league that doesn't play that
I was
night.
going to say they don't do it. It's because it's not number. They can't have
Exactly.
everybody play. But so, what is this? Is that Labor Day, September 1st? So, that Labor Day matchup with the Sparks is maybe the biggest one on the calendar right now.
Yes. I guess they are not the only team that is off. Atlanta and Connecticut play the penultimate night and don't play on the final day. It's only eight teams, in fact, are playing on the final day.
Well, at this point, they need to just start stacking up wins. They've got it. They have to take care of
They do.
business,
Yeah.
is where it's at. They
Yeah. I mean, if
have to
the.
beat the Wings. If they lose any of these games, all of a sudden it just makes they have to start beating good teams at that point. And recently, they have not shown that they can do that. And obviously, picking up those since we last chatted, they were on a what six game losing streak. They're not there anymore. They did only beat the Sky by 6 points. In the same way that you're talking about.
Yeah, it was a game for three quarters. It looked like a pretty good performance by the Storm. They really had a lot of turnovers in the fourth quarter, and then Kian Nurse started making a ton of threes. It was actually kind of similar to what they have done to some other teams, you know, Minnesota notably in some of these games where they were behind and then ended up being close losses. So I don't think it was a bad performance, but it definitely wasn't a good performance. We should also talk about the game in Vancouver for a second, because I was there at that one as well. The first WNBA regular season game outside the US ahead of the Toronto Tempo joining the league next year is the expansion 13th team. And so I figured it was going to be a pro Storm crowd, but I figured that most people were going to be there just kind of for a good game. And instead, once the Storm started making a bit of a run, Atlanta was up 5 at one point in the fourth quarter. And then Skylar Diggins, I think, got a three-shot shooting foul and made all three of them to cut it back to two. Starting at that point, the crowd was like deafeningly loud pro Storm the down the stretch, even though it was technically an Atlanta home game.
I mean, it was an Atlanta home game in the farthest city. Like,
Yes, we knew that it wasn't going to be anything like a home game for them,
it's
but
not
it
the
did
continental
not.
US in North America, maybe not the farthest city from Atlanta, but like,
It was the loudest I have heard a crowd cheer for the Storm since probably at least the 2022 semifinals. That's what
including the at Climate Pledge Arena.
I'm telling you. Yes. So, but I mean, obviously, there's a greater novelty to it for these fans in Vancouver than there is
How
for
many do you
Storm fans.
like? Were people mostly wearing Storm gear, or?
There was a wide selection with a lot of Vancouver Grizzlies gear, as we've seen it. The preseason games I've attended in Vancouver over the years, a little Tempo gear, but definitely Storm was the single most popular gear there.
Is it a smaller arena? Where was it at Rogers Center?
It was at Rogers Arena. They had 15,000 in there. It wasn't quite a sellout, but a good crowd. So it was a lot of fun. All right, UW News. On the men's basketball side, my ESPN colleague Pete Thamel reported Tuesday that Kansas is expected to hire UW assistant Tony Bland, who is part of Danny Sprinkle's first staff after completing a 3-year show cause period stemming from the fallout of the FBI's investigation, which seems like a different lifetime in college sports ago. So in opening in terms of assistant coaches, worth noting that Quincy Pondexter, he is an assistant coach, was not originally rehired in a bench role after playing that role in his first stint at UW. So I would not be surprised if he shifted into that. And then they promoted Jerry Hobby, who was an assistant coach last year, back to an assistant coach role. I'd be surprised at this stage of the summer if they went out and hired someone entirely new to be a bench assistant coach. But I suppose that is a possibility.
I mean, like the bench assistants in college and professional sports or whatever, like the broadcast booth and Naked Gun, the amount of people who are there is.
But it's not because there's only three that are allowed to sit in front of the bench. So there is a distinction to that.
Huge distinction. Those people are 2 feet away and they're behind. They have to yell their notes forward.
They do. I don't know if you're allowed to participate in huddles the same way. I guess in college basketball, you probably are. But in the NBA, I guess you can come from behind the bench. But usually there's only a handful of people who are actually in the huddles, not
You just
behind the
want as many
staff.
perspectives as possible. Just a lot of information, conflicting things sometimes. Let me ask you though. So, the way that players get to colleges in the past, assistants played a huge role in recruiting. Do assistants play that same role in recruiting now that players are getting paid? Or is it money does more of the talking than the relationships do?
I think we're still figuring that out. To have like someone who's like a recruiting specialist on your staff is probably not as important as it used to be,
I
but
mean, it's their
relationships.
GMs now. I don't, UW doesn't have a GM officially, but like there are GM positions, you know.
But the
There's
GM
Andrew
isn't
Luck.
necessarily the one who's talking to the players, I would say.
You don't think they're negotiating the contracts, the GMs?
Maybe, but they're not handling the day-to-day communication. I think that is probably still on the coaching staffs.
Okay. And the day-to-day communication is here is how much money it is. Is that more than the other team? Like, I guess I'm asking how much does losing an assistant coach affect? Because recruiting has been good.
I don't know.
Okay.
How would I know?
Okay, fair enough.
How would I know from the outside how much credit Tony Bland deserves for the Huskies recruiting this offseason versus Danny Sprinkle versus, who they have managing the cap, that sort of thing? I don't know.
Okay. I
I
don't
don't think
I
they know.
I'm gonna say I doubt it's a huge deal.
I mean, they hired him for a reason. It's disappointing to lose him, but after 1 year, but also probably a great opportunity for Tony Bland to, I think we can agree, was pretty unfairly hit with sanctions for things that are now completely above board and legal. UW football held their mock game on Saturday, now into the regular season portion of practice ahead of their game week next week. This time next week, we will on this podcast be previewing Colorado State. So, not a whole lot to say until then. Denzel Boston, though, back at practice. That was an exciting development.
Hello.
Good to see. All right, let's wrap up with the Seahawks.
Where did Tony Bland play?
I don't know
San Diego State.
Hosted the Chiefs in their second preseason game Friday, a 33-16 win. And you, again, were our preseason correspondent. The two things you love most, preseason football and the Sounders.
Maybe I just like saying yes to things.
You brought Mateo, right?
Yes. See,
How
I said I
did
like saying yes to things.
and he did wear a Seahawks jersey, correct?
He did. He had to pretend to be a Seahawks fan,
How
a
did you
Seahawks
feel
hoodie.
about it?
Hated every second of
Oh,
it.
well. That's why you take him, for the memories of how much he hated it.
I'm like, look, there's Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. There's Travis Kelce on the sideline. Trent McDuffie doesn't appear to be playing. The problem started when I think the rain was fine. I was a little bit nervous about the rain. It was a huge rainstorm on Friday night late, but
It was a much bigger rainstorm in Vancouver, let me tell you.
was it, I know the North got hit really hard. And they are the actual North, not Toronto, but they actually are.
We can concede that one. I mean, Alaska is still the actual North, and territories north of British Columbia, but relative to us.
My so we get in there and there's like a person like giving away ha there's like a stage where a person's playing. Are you familiar with they do this stuff? There's like a
Sure.
stage where people play, and then
Is
there is like
the
like
same stage where Hadith once was?
it's a little different, but like it's set up slightly differently, but yeah, basically. And so like they finish playing, and then a dude is giving away hats, and so he's doing trivia questions for hats, and I'm like, Mateo, we just gotta go over there and try, because there was like four people watching, you know what I mean? And so they asked these trivia questions. It was like they were multiple choice, crushed all of them, right? Which they were easy questions. It was like, who caught the touchdown in the NFC Championship game to win? It was the second NFC Championship game.
Doesn't matter which NFC Championship game, unless you're talking about 2005. Same answer.
Yes. And I'm like, Jermaine Kearse, all-time leading rusher. It's like stuff like that. What was the Seahawks' original conference? Stuff like that. So people were just like, it's kind of chaos. Not a lot of good calling on people. Not a lot of good order in this situation, if you could believe it. A lot of drunk people around. Last question is, what is the name of the Seahawks live mascot? And I thought they meant like, because they have the like kids mascot, Skyhawk or something. So I thought they were talking about Blitz as like the live mascot, like there's a
Yeah.
person, and they literally meant
The
the
CEO.
actual Seahawk. And so I told Mateo, I was like, oh, it's Blitz or whatever. And what is the
Name of the.
I think it's Tyla.
That sounds right. Yeah, when you say that.
Hold on. Maybe it's Talon.
Taima the Hawk.
Tyma. Okay. Which honestly was not information that I knew, the name of the actual Seahawk. But I
It's somewhere
completely.
deep in the recesses, but I could not have summoned it at that point.
I mean, there was multiple choice, so if I would have known he wasn't talking about Blitz, I might have gotten there because I
Right.
knew it wasn't Skyhawk or something. I didn't hear what the other, well, it was a little chaos. But I was like, oh, he's talking about Blitz here. And so Mateo runs up, he calls him like Blitz, and he's like, no. And I was like, God. So Mateo was furious at me.
Crestfallen. Wow.
I was like, you don't want a Seahawks hat, dude. You're good. I don't need a Seahawks hat. Not interested at all. I did not wear a single piece of Seahawks clothing to the game. But I wore a Mariners hoodie, and as I was walking in, the dude asked me what the Mariners score was, and in a game that I think they subsequently lost, because that's what they. Oh no, they won that game.
Would Thursday have been the final game in Baltimore?
No, it was Friday night,
Oh, right, Friday night. Yes, they did win on Friday. Yeah.
but, so Mateo was just like so angry at me. He basically wanted to go home immediately after that, and I finally convinced him. Like I was trying to find the thing to get it back. I was trying to like play it up, have fun, be like, oh, they're doing the 12th man flag. It's Kurt Warner with a C. And he was like, Kurt Warner's black. And I was like, it's a different Kurt Warner. I'm like, the car dealerships, you remember. He kind of got a little bit interested in the game because there were some like kind of obnoxious Chiefs fans behind us screaming really loudly about things. And there's nothing that gets you more into cheering for the other team than annoying fans.
Well, especially like, the Chiefs are a noted rival, Forte.
No, that is true. But he has dominance over them. You know what I mean? They just don't know it, right? Like,
Oh, yeah, I guess, yes,
they
he
kicked
does.
their
Yeah.
ass in the
Yeah.
Super Bowl. Like, it wasn't close. So, the Mateo right now has bragging rights over Chiefs fans, but the Chiefs fans aren't aware of that information because why would this child in Seattle, Washington, wearing a Seahawks hoodie, be an Eagles fan?
Lifelong Eagles fan.
So, it's complicated. But so he got really annoyed with them. And it was just like, you're cheering too hard, my guy. This is the
It's the
preseason.
preseason.
The Seahawks scored a
We're just here
touchdown, and
for
I
a
think
good
I
time.
clapped. Like, I basically was like, the New York Times crossword ain't gonna do itself. You know what I mean?
You
And
want to respect the effort by the player.
no, I'm not criticizing anybody, but I'm just like,
Yeah.
I just
No,
do not care.
you want it, but yeah, like a little high fives maybe, but
I had a friend who texted
you're
me
not
before the
fist
game
pumping.
started and was like, hey, are you at the game? He was tracking me. I'm sure he knew I was at the game. But he was like, are you at the game? And I was like,
On
yeah,
your
we're,
iPhone?
yeah, on Find My.
I don't
This is
get
how the rest of the world lives. But he was like, oh,
Jan would never.
we'll meet you at halftime. Oh, I've got Jans.
I
I know where she's at all times,
Yeah,
except
but
when her
they just
phone's dead, which is a lot.
Oh no.
But he was like, I'll come find you at halftime. And I was like, sounds good. I'll let you know if I leave before then.
Oh,
And do you
I
want to know what?
you left before then?
I left before then. So
Well, I
here's what I did to convince Mateo to care about, to bring him back, because I had to get him back for my failures as a parent of getting the trivia question wrong. I was like, we parked in Columbia City, and I was like, I'm going to look up the full tilt hours, and
Oh,
we'll
there
get
you
full
go.
tilt on the way home. So he was like, when he heard that, he was like cheering for the Seahawks, being like, well, he really committed to the bit of being a Seahawks fan. And I was like, that's great. That's all we needed. He was staring down those Chiefs fans. They were so annoying. I'm like, maybe this is not the right way to approach the situation, but I complained about this last year. I feel like my time as a Seahawks season ticket holder is like, it's wearing thin. I don't know if I can really stomach just like the approach that they have, because I'm like, this is it is a team decision issue right now, and it's all in like basically the like for the sake of capitalism, right? Like, they could protect these tickets if they wanted to. I think I talked about this, like the Savannah Bananas go so far out of their way, right? I'm like basically gonna have to show a
to make sure that fans of the other team that the Savannah Bananas
no
go in
to make
against
sure
don't
that the
come.
people who buy the tickets are the people who are there. And so you could keep, like, for season ticket holders or whatever. I'm like, I
I
basically
don't
have to
know
show my
that
fucking passport
I
for
think
the
that's
Savannah Bananas.
I don't think know that I
European
think it's
soccer does it
necessarily that much
very well.
better of a system, but we can discuss that at a different time.
But I'm just like, I don't, and I get it. They're the Chiefs, whatever. The Chiefs have moved. I used to always, of the big teams, they were always kind of like, I would always cheer for the Chiefs versus everybody else, versus the Patriots who were like ultimate evil. Now the Patriots are fun and quaint. And the Chiefs are the most annoying fan base in the NFL. So it's interesting how times change. But that, I guess, aside from that, my takeaways were offensive line looks great. Blocking scheme looks great. The run game looks great. Clint Kubiak isn't joking. He means it when he's talking about
Oh, he means it.
the whole like running and fullback situation. I'm curious what it'll mean long term. I am so unconvinced that this is an effective offense. Like,
I
to
don't
be
know.
a Super Bowl winning team that
Well,
I
who
and
said anything
again,
about winning a Super Bowl?
that's the goal. I know you're a Storm fan, so like your goal is just making the playoffs, I think.
No, the
When all the teams make the playoffs.
I mean, it's less than it used to be.
But fair enough. It's only more than two-thirds of the league, I think. But if that is the goal, that's the reason they're playing football. How
I
about this?
mean,
I'm not convinced that it can win the division and win a playoff game. An offense like that. I need to see it happen.
I'm not convinced, particularly with the current personnel, but I mean, I do think that there's like a segment of the Seahawks fan base who's like, and certainly the Seahawks media who's like, basically, this offense is, going to be one of the best in the league, basically, because of the fact that they're doing all the things that people wanted them to do, for a long period of time. And like, I do think that the Shanahan tree offense is generally an above average good offense. It emphasizes play action, which is good, and it does, I think, create favorable running opportunities a lot of the time. But if it were that easy, everyone in the NFL would just do it. If it was just like, step one, hire a Kubiak or a Shanahan. Step three, Super Bowl. Like, everyone would just do it. It's not that easy. It's not that simple. But it has looked good in the preseason. The shortest.
Maybe it is that easy. I don't, like I said, I'm not convinced right now. I still think the team's probably going to be pretty. I'm going to be betting the over when we do our over-unders podcast.
I mean, preseason results do matter to a degree. I am coming around on it. The shortest drive, so Sam Darnold took the opening drive and then Drew Lock thereafter with either of them at quarterback, was an 11-play, 64-yard drive that ended with a fourth and goal incompletion at the 2-yard line.
And
That's
they got
pretty
safety right
wild.
after. It was like pretty much exactly like what you want to have happen. It was the last play that I saw.
It was
I
six
have
runs.
no idea what happened after that. I did not look at a box score. I know nothing. I heard that there were some touchdowns on my way out.
Milrow's stats were pretty good. So there were six runs on the 10-play, 81-yard drive with the starters on the field, including the Jalen Milrow push sneak. You were there when they unveiled the push sneak.
I couldn't really tell exact. I couldn't tell from where I was sitting that Milrow was the quarterback until the replay, and I was like, oh yes.
Followed by a 9-play, 85-yard touchdown drive with seven called runs, although it ended with a Jake Bobo touchdown. So, yeah, I mean, quarterbacks combined to complete 17 of 21 passes for 209 yards and two touchdowns. Seahawks averaged 5.6 yards per rush. And if you look at the top four running backs who saw action, an average of 6.4 yards per carry, including a 30-yarder for George Helani, who continues to impress. Certainly in the preseason games, he's been outperforming Damian Martinez. Jake Bobo, two touchdowns on two targets. Were you there for both of them? Or the first one?
I was there for the first one. I just left by the second one.
And then Tariq Young, three catches and three targets for 52 yards. Will be interesting to see how that wide receiver battle plays out. So, did anything stand out to you defensively?
Do
Obviously,
you
that's a
know what the
little harder for
Saints'
me to
offensive
evaluate from
DVOA was last year?
like 24th. Oh, much lower. But
Oh,
remember this.
no, I didn't. I can't see it.
Oh, you're asking me as a question. Oh, no. Well, there was like the first two games where they came out lighting the league on, setting the
I
league
mean,
on
the whole
fire.
season, not just the first two
I
games where
know.
you're
I'm
like, the
just.
Saints are the greatest team of all time.
Yeah, but it is an interesting in the context of how well the Seahawks are playing in
That
the
those
preseason.
games, the start that the Saints had last year will make me nervous after the first two games of the season.
Yeah. So let me look up where they actually finished. Okay, this is end of regular season prior to playoffs.
I doubt it changed that much. They were not a participant.
Thanks. I was unaware. New Orleans finished 23rd in offensive DVOA. I mean, their personnel at the end of the season was not ideal, I would say. But yes, so again, it's not one simple trick to have the best offense in the league, as
We'll
it
always have
never
that
is.
47, that 44-19 over the Cowboys was like, that was really special.
They were cooking. The Spencer Rattler era, 0-6, not so great.
I mean, isn't the point to sort of minimize the
Quarterback proof?
importance of the quarterback, though?
Yes, but then you can minimize is not obviate.
Okay. We'll see. I don't know. That's my takeaway, is people are getting very excited about it. I mean, I was excited about it. Look, the offensive line seems like it's great. These are preseason games, and it's fun to get excited about things. And that's my entire takeaway. I gave him a, the courtesy clap that Jake Bobo deserved for the touchdown. It's great having a Bobo touchdown. I was happy about all of it. I thought Damian Martinez was in the mix a little bit,
Yeah,
much
he
more
certainly
than he had
performed
been.
better. Yeah.
I mean, like some of the like deep running backs, honestly, people did too good where it's sort of like it raises an eyebrow where you're like, huh, George Helani was at like 10 yards per carry. Jakardia Wright was like over five. Charbonnet had almost no, he only had five carries, but he was at nine, where you're kind of like, these people did a little too good. And I know that not all of these running backs are amazing and that the blocking scheme is not going to be this good. So it's almost like when the team does too well and you're like, that doesn't, something doesn't check out here.
This is actually an issue with the opponent, not how great they are.
I didn't realize that, I had no idea that Minshew was going to be starting for the Chiefs. Literally came out and I was like, oh yeah, here we go. Insanity.
7-9, 70 yards, touchdown.
He played pretty well. And the children behind me loved Robert Tonyan. Their dad was like, that's your boy right there, Carson Steele. I was like, I bet he is, sir. I bet he is.
But again, more Bobo.
Here's the other takeaway that I had. Football is great. Just being in the stadium again and experiencing football again was kind of like, oh yeah, I
Even though
actually am
it
excited for this to start.
made you want to give up your tickets.
So, no, it's the other fans that make me want to give up the
I
tickets.
know.
It's not the sport of football. Also, when you're at home, you get to watch even more football.
That is a fair point. Seahawks heading to Green Bay will have joint practices
Oh God,
Thursday
there's
and
more of
Friday
these.
ahead of the preseason finale on Saturday afternoon against the Packers. So stay tuned as we head
Or
towards.
don't stay tuned. That one especially, maybe we do.
On that note,
I'm not going to go to Full Tilt after that one.
I mean, you can always go to Full Tilt. Nothing's stopping you from
I
going
just
to Full
not going to.
Tilt. On
Thanks for
that
listening.
note,
Thanks.
bye.
Am I wrong about there being less attention on preseason? Or is it just me?
I think it's just you.
Okay. Because I feel like,
Maybe it's because you're not on social media. So you're not getting the intense preseason breakdowns that I'm seeing in my feed.
on Blue Sky and Twitter,
Yeah.
TikTok isn't social media to you?
I guess you are on that. So I don't know if they're not on that,
I
if
know, it
you've
might just be like I'm not engaging with it, so I'm not getting fed the content is there, but I'm not engaging. I mean, I see people talking about like fantasy football and stuff like that, but
Yeah, sometimes they talk about what happens in the preseason in terms of its impact on fantasy football.
I feel like the trend away from playing players, if
Well,
this would have
yeah.
been, 6 years ago or something.
Well, people like were very into the Cincinnati Washington game on Monday night because they were playing their starting quarterbacks.
For how many series?
Burrow was out there a long time,
What
evidently.
the fuck were they doing? Why?
It was on ESPN, so I endorsed the decision in
Oh yeah, good
totality.
call. Good call. Not for who, for what?
I mean, actually, I
For
don't, because
ratings, for money.
it meant less
My
Jake Browning. Burrow was 9 of 14 for 62 yards.
God.
Browning threw 25 passes.
That's
Oh, I guess
criminal.
Jalen Daniels was not out there. Josh Johnson had 6 of 9. I don't know if he started or Sam Hartman, but presumably
I
Josh
just,
Johnson got the start.
Burrow of all quarterbacks should not take a snap during the preseason.
Josh Johnson was signing with NFL teams long before you were born. Manny will be signing with NFL teams long after you're gone.
I
Just
could
love
be
it.
wrong. I don't know, but I do think that the impact of, and once we get
I
the
mean,
extra
sure, I
game,
agree with that.
I feel like it's barely happening.
I would
It
not
might
agree
be
with
I'm
that.
just too much in baseball world. I mean, like there's the Shadur stuff, but beyond that, it's kind of been like pretty minimal to me. Like really, I don't know. NFL season is going to start in week one for me, paying attention.
Well, you better show up for the fantasy draft.
I
Only fantasy draft singular.
Singular. Well, we also are gonna have to do our over-unders pod with Ben. Like, I was thinking of that.
We are going to have to do that. Yeah.
I haven't taken a gander at it. I assume Simmons is gonna do. I kind of like to listen to that first and see if I agree or disagree with him. I was also thinking of this. Your lack of interest or willingness to engage in any movie that has even horror tropes means that you're just like willfully not participating in such a large swath of culture.
You know what? The culture is going to exist whether I engage with it or not.
It's like preseason.
And I'm glad because by all accounts, amazing movies, and I hope they do terrifically. It's just not for me.
Are you aware of the movie Weapons?
I've heard of it.
Okay. That's, yeah, no, you really approach it the same way that I approach preseason football. I left
Yeah.
that game and I was like, that's the last I'll think of it.
And it was.
Well, until today. Now
All
this is
right.
the last I'll think of it.
It's like you're going to take the Men in Black memory wiper.
I'll talk to you later.
Bye.